Welcome to the Future of Tourism Podcast. I'm David Peacock.
Stop owning your own content.
Young leaders are stepping up.
Bring everyone to the table
and imagine their world anew.
In this space, over the last nearly 3 years, we've talked a lot about destination development, stakeholder engagement, and the regenerative power of tourism when it's done well. Today, August 8, 2022, almost every destination organization in the world has, as my friend Petra Stusek likes to say, moved on. That is to say, almost every destination organization in the world is currently grappling with the idea of what their role and function is locally, how they engage better with their citizens and stakeholders, and what tools they use to craft this new, more perfect union. No more proselytizing and navel-gazing. It's time to get to work. In the end, engagement is engagement. There's no substitute for getting out there, meeting, sharing, and understanding. It inevitably leads to great things. Things that only become apparent when you open your mind to the possibilities of what other people are thinking. One exemplary and ongoing destination development project is the Grand River in southern Ontario, Canada. Running for nearly 200 kilometers, the river from its headwaters outlets into Lake Erie and the Great Lakes and is one of the original Canadian heritage rivers that played such a significant role in the settling of the interior of Canada in the 1800s. But how do you develop a river? Where do you start? My guest today, Tristan Vogel, is the project manager for Regional Tourism Organization Number 4 in Ontario, Canada. You may have heard of them. They're a small government-funded incubator of tourism development that's been, well, hitting it out of the park for about a decade. My other guest is a renowned Canadian dramaturge, playwright, and actor, Peter Smith, who comes to the Grand River Project from a completely different angle. Good morning, Tristan. How are you? Where are you? What's it like?
Good morning, David Peacock. I am in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada. We are currently surviving what we Canadians call a heat wave. And I'm very thankful to have new air conditioning this summer, so I am not sweltering. So it's, yes, thank you for having me here.
Well, I too am thankful for your new air conditioning. Peter Smith, it's always great to see you. How are you? Where are you? What's it like?
It's great to be here, David, and nice to see you again, Tristan. I am in the east end of Toronto, Canada, and I'm heading off to Saturna Island tomorrow morning early, which is on Canada's west coast, the last island before the San Juan Islands.
Pretty cool. Okay, guys, I want to talk about a project that you've both been in and around. It's been going for more than a decade. The Grand River runs, and Chris, Tristan, you're the expert here, correct me if I'm wrong, it runs about 200 kilometers from the headwaters, which is in a marsh called the Luther Marsh, out into Lake Erie. For almost 20 years, it's been designated as a Canadian Heritage River, which means it has a significant part in the history of Canada. Tristan, you work for the Regional Tourism Office. Its mandate really was to look at the tourism economy of that region and then to create a strategic plan for amplifying those assets and creating a more sustainable and engaged tourism product that would take us into the 2030s and 2040s. The river is a great example. It spans a huge geographic area. You have managed over the last decade not just to create a set of standards around it, but also to bring a group of stakeholders to the table who are ready to roll up their sleeves together, often with no remuneration, to make this a better river. Tell me a little bit about the project in your own words. How do you describe it?
Yeah, it's been a long time in the making. As you said, almost a decade long that we've been looking at this asset. It was recognized that it was a really important recreation asset that ran, like you said, from Dundalk, which is a small headwater space up in the countryside in the middle of Ontario, and runs down, and it changes so drastically across the space, from being little streams up in Dundalk to being a full-fledged river down at the mouth where it's almost 16 feet deep. And so that development has been really interesting and has had to bring together a vast majority of stakeholders. So how do we do that along such a long river? Like you said, it's 200 to 300 kilometers through southern Ontario. So that started with the development of an access point standards manual. So that was the need to have branding and cohesive messaging across the river. So in partnership with another of the regional tourism organizations, a standards manual and pilot design was created so that we could begin developing access point sites so that there would be clean and convenient spaces to get in and out of the river.
Okay, so you've got this brilliant river. It's been around for time immemorial. Even their First Nations people say, you know, that the man that you put the river there, you know, at the same time as he put them there. So it goes very, very far back in history. The river exists. It's a functioning river. What's a tourism organization doing development on the river for? Why isn't it just advertising? That's what tourism organizations do. They just advertise their way to success. Why isn't it doing that?
That would be an easy thing to say if we could just advertise, but we can't advertise an asset that is just naturalized, right? There needs to be some sort of infrastructure around it to be able to begin to bring tourists to it. So it has, and to do it from a regenerative point of view. So we don't just want to go in and just put people on the river for the sake of putting them on for a profit. We want to make sure that people are coming and that they have the right kind of attitude towards the river. So we want to make sure that they see the sustainable aspects of the river and the conservation efforts that have been a huge part of the Grand River's history. Many people that we've been talking to as we've been working collecting stories along the river talk about a time when the river was somewhere you didn't go and touch. Like, a lot of people really recognize that it was dirty and it had a lot of it had a lot of agricultural runoff and a lot of industrialization built around it. So there have been great conservation efforts to bring it back to its natural state to finally be able to use it as a recreation asset. So we really look at it that it's not just for that profit of having people run up and down the river, but really bringing them back and connecting to that, to the space. So.
All right. I want to jump to Pete, but I also want to say this. You have a particular focus at Regional Tourism Organization 4 in Ontario, Canada, on this idea of regeneration and sustainability. The river is this incredible asset. I understand there's a sustainability plan at the root of the engagement you're currently starting, but the idea is that this asset, you are working to basically future-proof it for the next 50 years and to see it actually not just maintain its condition, but to restore a whole bunch of its past as well. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. And one of the things that was definitely evident during the COVID-19 pandemic was the need for some kind of carrying capacity in these recreation assets. So a lot of the conservation spaces were overwhelmed by people as people look to get outdoors and use those spaces. So COVID has really allowed some of those parks and areas to really measure and be able to make it more sustainable. So they're not being overrun. They're able to put limits on the number of people that can come in, and that's going to help with those conservation efforts. So the pandemic was helpful for sure.
Okay. So in a modern world, is a disrupted world, we know that the consumer will find their own path to an asset. If they're a paddler, they'll take the paddler's path to the river. If they're an Indigenous history buff, they'll take their Indigenous history's path. You guys have started a really interesting program. I think you call it the Grand Rivers Histories Project. Is that the working title? Pete Smith, that's where the playwright, dramaturg, Canadian, quintessential Canadian Pete Smith, I'm surprised you're not in your red lumber jacket and red hat again, comes into the story. What caught your imagination? How did the tourism organization with the river and the stories of a history that spans the geologic, the Indigenous, the early settlers, United Empire loyalists, the first Black settlers. How did a project like that catch your attention? What are you doing here?
Well, it's through story, always. Always for me, it comes, what's the story? What are the stories? What are the unspoken ones? What are the ones that are told quietly at night? What are the ones that are shouted and played along the main street? And when Tristan organized it, it was such a eclectic collection of people, from historians, there were scientists, there were tourism operators, there were philosophers, all of them good storytellers. So at first I thought, well, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. And then, because I'm not from the Grand River, I am the traveler. I'm the person who comes into a place. And the more I went, the more stories I heard, I thought, yeah, this is beautiful. I look forward to learning more. And the way I learn about things is through the people telling stories about that thing, whatever that place, that location, their town, their family, whatever it might be. So Tristan very kindly said, well, what are you here for? What are you going to do? What do you want to do? You want to do something? And I pitched the community play project idea, and I have worked on two other ones. They are transformative in their experience. They are inclusive. Anyone who wants to participate can. And the difference about this one is that it's a 310-kilometer play. I've never done one of those before. So you're a little bit off at 200. It's 310 from Dundalk down to Port Maitland. And I've learned this, David, just in being around Tristan and many, many others. And within that, I heard something today. A friend of mine, their son became a doctor, graduated medical school. And he sent me a note. And he said the keynote speaker was Indigenous. And she said the longest journey for any of us is from our head to our heart. And in some ways, this journey that I'm on right now is really coming to a knowledge, coming to an understanding in my mind, but also then dropping into the heart of it. And that's been really just, well, humbling. It's been filled with respect, with being present, mindful, and being filled with gratitude. And I just came off the two-row wampum, which I can get into if you want to, but that's another story unto itself. So there's a structure that's emerging. We're using technology. We're also going to use theater. We're going to use music. We're going to use a lot of different things. But it's going to be basically the story told of this river by the people along this river. That's the idea of this thing. And if you want an animation project, and it's mad. I mean, it's madness to think that we can even do this. But that's the delicious nature of it.
So Tristan, thanks for that, Pete. Tristan, you are literally doubling down on the idea that if you empower various verticals along this river for storytelling, that authentic storytelling will drive not just the awareness of the river, but it'll actually drive the stewardship and the care of the river. Is that right?
No, you're absolutely right. And it also must move at the speed of trust. And it includes listening. I cannot emphasize enough. And David, I do love to tell a story, but my father said, two ears, one mouth, listen twice as much as you speak. And I'm working on it, not very successfully, but I am working on it. And the stories that I've heard so far.
Let me ask you some questions about that. I want to ask Tristan this question. Tristan, when you started to engage, okay, so you've got a river, you've decided it's an asset development priority for the RTO. And as I understand, and I know this actually well, the early projects took place some 6-7 years ago. You started with access standards. You built some really nicely defined and contained access points, which became a showpiece, which created a bit of a fire down the river for other people to look at it and say, wow, you know, if we could just get around the planning part of this, this is great. So you've got that whole piece in motion. But in the last 2 years during the pandemic, this is the part that really amazes me. You decide it's time to launch, you know, sort of the debutante party for the river. You decide you're going to launch this Histories Project. And the Histories Project speaks to where the rivers come from. And you have a really interesting mandate. You say every voice must be used. Nobody's voice is illegitimate. So tell me about that first group, because Pete says, you know, the 40 odd people in the room, how do you get that group together? This is an exercise in stakeholder engagement. And I want our listeners to really look at this and say, wow, doesn't this sound like an odd thing for a DMO to do? Because it is, but it's how you do engagement. There is no substitute for the miles. You must go and pound the pavement and meet people and talk to them. But tell me about the engagement piece. Tell me about that first meeting group. Who was there? How did you put it together?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was putting that Grand River Histories project together and thinking through animation projects, I was thinking about who could I empower to bring forward their voices. And so, you know, I came from it from my point of view, it's more of an institutional, organizational perspective. So I wanted to put other groups together like that from in Ontario. We've got the ministry that helps to fund the RTOs. So I put representation from there, then ourselves, the municipalities, to really build out the organizational part of the river. But then the real bread and butter of the Grand Rivers Histories Project are the historians and the creatives. So what I really wanted to bring together was historians who have been doing this passion-filled volunteer work for the most part along the river, and who had never been given the opportunity to creatively disseminate their information. So I wanted to bring them together with people like Pete Smith and people like we have XR Studio really involved, and to get those voices talking in the same room to see what kind of collaboration can come out of it. Like, how can someone who has been looking at, if there's a Black settlement in Fergus, Ontario, that has been pretty much erased. And so how can we bring that back using new technologies? So putting them in touch with augmented reality and creating that animation on the river. So that also helps. Once we have animation on the river, there's more for people to see, more for people to, you know, chew on while they're enjoying the asset. So
you invited me to early meetings, and I'm really thankful for being there. And there's a really interesting dynamic. I think you hit it really well. It was so fascinating to sit and listen to sort of a series of histories that were overlapping, contiguous, not contiguous, but from, as you said, the United Empire Loyalist Black settlement that's erased through the industrial period of Brantford and then, you know, and its heyday in the farm machinery industry. Everybody in America knows John Deere. The other tractor was the red one. It's the Massey Ferguson, you know, those kind of things. And the other piece, Pete, though, I want to talk to you about this. There is a very intentional effort to include our First Nations partners in a way that's authentic. And this is a very delicate subject because there's been a lot of inauthentic work in that area over 200 years. And Lord knows we hit smack dab on the face of that in the summer of 2019 with our sort of our national shame around our Indigenous heritage. But tell me about the First Nations engagement piece on the river, because this is the first I've seen of it, and it's going, I'd love to say it's going well, but that's such a white Anglo-Saxon American word for how things go. It's going. So tell us how it's going, Pete.
Well, it really started with Tristan, the project that she put together, because there were First Nation people, Indigenous people there, and they would talk about their experience on the Grand, and there was a lot of respect shown, but there's a lot of pain there too, and there's issues in and around land back, which is something maybe the listeners don't know about, but it's a very serious movement with regards to treaties basically going unrecognized, things that were settled hundreds of years ago, completely ignored. So there is a political feature here. There is personal damage to the residential schools. Those are on the Grand River. The Mushhole, the Mohawk Institute is on the Grand River. So we've met elders. There was a process. In fact, one of the meetings we had a story circle that Tristan brought tobacco, which is a sign of respect. And it was offered to the elder who was leading the story circle, Ellie Joseph, who's a remarkable individual. And when I say that, people say it all the time. Ellie Joseph is the real deal. Anyway, she accepted the tobacco that Tristan had put into a bag the way that it was traditionally done, with so much grace. I feel like connecting the Indigenous community has been humbling, but it's also been the knowledge that is being offered as what respect looks like. I honestly believe that respect is very important. I believe humility is important. Those two, I'm an amateur. Like I'm working down in the lower depths of that understanding. When I talk to people like Ellie, or when I talk to Heather Bombury, or any of the folks that we've been connected with at Six Nations and beyond, it is another category of respect and humility. And it is so, I don't want to get too romantic about it, but it is instructional. It is informative. It is essential. It is in the DNA. I will tell you one story on this experience I had, and because I'm telling stories, there was a Mohawk woman, and she is an activist, and she is a scholar, and she teaches at one of our universities in Ontario here. And she said, I'm going to tell you the Mohawk word for love. And so she said it, and I can't remember, but she did it very quickly. And she said, that the word you use for love, the word I just told you, actually means 8 different things in your language. It does not mean one thing. So it means precious. It means, what does this mean to you? How important is this to you? It's a series of things. It is an expansive word. I don't think like that, though. I don't translate it back to English for myself. As I learn the language and as I speak my language, that is the richness of where I come from. That is my culture. And in learning that, just even that moment, it was like, right, what we did to Indigenous people when we came from Europe and when we came from other parts of the world was ignore that. And it was to our own detriment. I feel, and this, and I'm not trying to put too fine a point on this community play project, but by working to come together to animate the story, those stories are going to run in two separate lines, and they will intersect, but they are two separate lines, not unlike the two row wampum. And it's, I've never done anything like this before in my life, and I've been involved in those stories in a lot of different ways.
Pete, you keep referencing the two row wampum. What is the two row wampum? Tell us, just tell us.
Okay, so the wampum is a belt, and it was done. And it was done with the Dutch, and it was a belt that was offered. And the idea was that both nations, the European nations and the Indigenous people, would row beside each other without influencing unduly, harming the other for all time. That they would row together in this new emerging society. But the older society, the Indigenous society that had been here for thousands of years, was not going to be beaten down, harmed, ruined, which in fact is exactly what happened. What Ellie and what many others have done, it's also in New York State on the Hudson River, the two row wampum brings allies, they're called, with Indigenous people, and you row beside them down a river. And in doing that, there is a respect shown. And then at night, what happens is there are elder presentations, there are experiences in Mohawk, in Oneida, in Cayuga. And it's, I honestly, okay, there's another thing. You want to come to the Grand River, do the two row, and it is open to anybody. I'm just telling you, there's a pitch, but I also think it's an awesome experience.
If anybody doubts that Pete's bent on the Grand River is authentic storytelling, be noted. All right,
noted.
You did say something interesting there, Pete. You talked about the lost sort of sensibilities, and Tristan, you've touched on this. One of the other aspects of the Grand River Project, and Tristan, I know you have a very sort of high level 40,000 foot view of this. You want a viable assets that has a engaged group of stakeholders who are constantly rallying around it, improving it, supporting it, advocating it on its behalf. You want to tell authentic stories. You want to move and inspire people to treat it better. But there's some learnings in there too on the sustainability piece that you attach to the river. And I know you're doing some work with the GDSM movement out of Barcelona, Guy Bigwood and crew, Global Destination Sustainability Movement, on a sustainability index for the river. But a lot of what we're hearing from the Indigenous population really mirrors our modern thinking in sustainability, doesn't it? I mean, the oldest tome about it is the old statement, living sense, is it seven generations back and seven generations forward? Boy, doesn't that sound a lot like our sustainability inquiry at this point in time?
Yeah, I mean, if only we had been living that way, we wouldn't be thinking so hard about sustainability now, I think. But yeah, it's taking us back to that regenerative thing. We have to look at things differently. We can't keep this. We have to take sustainability a little bit further. And a lot of people view sustainability from an environmental perspective only, right? That's been a thing that's been in the consciousness for a while from an environmental view. But we also need to start looking at it culturally. And I think that's where I come from with it, is that there are things that need to be uncovered and need to be spoken, and bringing those voices to the table and allowing them, giving them the opportunities to bring those voices forward are where we're at. And I think that's the first step for us.
Okay. So talking about engagement, you both are very busy people. You both got big day jobs. Pete Smith, you are the executive director of the Canadian Center for Rural Creativity. Tristan, apart from the river and your purview at RTL4, I know you're working on the sport hosting program out of Kitchener-Waterloo to Cambridge. You're also working on an incredible placemaking project in St. Jacobs that brings together some of the best consultations in the world. That we're going to do a whole show on that. Trust me, it's a great little program. Here's two people pouring their hearts into the river. Let's talk about how we get this to happen, because RTO4, I got to give it real credit. It's done a special job in the world of tourism. It has done more work to specifically understand and plumb how we engage stakeholders and to build networks and to try and sustain those networks. So the Grand River, those multiplicity of stakeholders, that's the Histories Project we're talking about. There's 40 stakeholders, but the truth of the matter, there's probably another 20 stakeholders on the river. The municipalities, the city of Kitchener, Waterloo, and Cambridge, the Parks and Rec departments, the Grand River Sporting Associations, the number of river asset developers. There's tubing and canoeing and kayaking on the river. All of the Grand River watershed conservationist areas, the Grand Trails Network. This is a river that has an intertwined group of players. I don't think I've ever seen such an attempt to help them coordinate in order to realize all sorts of gains and efficiencies. This is a tremendous project. There's a lot of players at the table now. That's a role and function that RTO 4 took really seriously. About a decade ago, it decided that the best destinations were the result of engaged stakeholders who took an active role in collectively shaping their future. That's what's driving this project, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's at the root. I think getting the voices of the people who have lived and learned and grown up along the river are the people that'll drive the development forward. And I think that that's what we're seeing throughout the...
Okay, but then you're tricky too, because you have these little sort of levers that you pull along the way. And the one that I love the most is this thing called Destination Animation Fund. So you have assets. And in RTO4, you have a number of prioritized assets across, and just so everyone knows, RTO4 is a region that's a couple hundred miles long and more than 100 miles wide. It has at least 7 DMOs in it. So you prioritize your assets, towns like Stratford, towns like St. Jacobs, things like the river. And then you develop this thing called the Destination Animation Fund, which, to give credit its due, was borrowed from Dublin, Ohio. They used to try and make themselves more Irish every year, and they developed a neat little program. You guys took it and ran with it. Tell me about the Destination Animation Fund briefly, and then we'll talk to Pete about how sort of he wedged himself into that fund, and that was the beginning of a big project. So what is the Destination Animation Fund? How does it work? Where do you use it? What's it for? And this is a really important on-ramp for stakeholder engagement.
Yeah, for sure. One of the great things about the Destination Animation Project is it allows us to give little amounts of seed money to projects that have these ideas stirring around. So it's usually a new or enhanced project. Something like Pete's Community Play fits very nicely into a program like that. And so it's giving little bits of seed money, giving little project support to help, and of course making collaborations and networks and helping people to get some of those projects off the ground. So it has to be focused on the Grand River. It has to be related to it, and that's how we start to build these assets.
Yeah, you got a criterion there that I think is the coolest criterion in the world. When the partner comes to you with their idea about animating the Grand River, one of the key components they have to deliver on is they have to show you how what they're going to do will be both highly shareable, and then they have to show you how it's going to be highly shared, which puts it right into the social realm. On that program, I think people will be surprised to learn that the amounts of money that you spend in a place as big as Stratford, or on a river as big as the Grand, or in a town as big as Laura and Fergus, it's shockingly small. If I'm not mistaken, you said that the Grand River Animation Fund for this year was $40,000.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. With that, you get to see a whole bunch of little things. It wasn't just the community play. There's a number of other projects in there, aren't there?
Yeah, there's a number of projects.
Like what? Give us a quick rundown.
I had mentioned earlier about the Guelph Black Heritage Society is working on a project in Pierpoint Park, which is a settlement that's been erased. So they're working with an augmented reality company. They're also developing an audio tour throughout the region to connect the Black history to the river and to their heritage hall, which is in Guelph, Ontario. Another really cool one is the Homer Watson Gallery in Kitchener-Waterloo. Homer Watson was a famous conservationist around the region, and he was also a famous painter. So they are going to be using some of their funds to create a gallery along the river. They've got a beautiful walking path down there. So they're going to move some of the gallery out to the river. So that'll hopefully get more people to come and explore their outdoor grounds, because that's currently an underused part of their space as well. And as well, another one that RTO3 is working on that came out of it is with Six Nations, developing an audio tour down there as well. They've had one that has been existing for a long time, but they don't have the capacity or the human power to carry it out as much as they would like to. So digitizing it will allow that story to be spread. And so that's a great asset as well.
Okay, that's a really interesting articulation, because in each of those cases, you're playing a catalytic role. You're adding a bit of spice, a bit of sauce, a bit of sustenance, but you are not carrying the ball. So this animation fund, the stakeholder engagement, is about unlocking that alignment. Pete Smith, I've worked with you before. I've worked with you on a community play, actually, some 20-odd years ago, was it?
Yeah, 30, 50, 100 years ago. It was a long time ago, Peacock, yes.
Ouch. Pete, I know what the Animation Fund is capable of, and it's a great starting point. But, I mean, you and the Canadian Center for Rural Creativity, you take a flyer on this one, and you get a bit of seed money from the program. You and I both know that by the time a community play is realized at this magnitude on that river, it's going to come in between $1 and $2 million on the conservative side. So that's 3 years of work for you. You take the seed money from the RTO. You're going to have to get Ontario Arts Council money for the next bump. And then you're going to have to get Canada Council. We're going to go through the normative thing. Tell me about the animation program, though. It actually was enough to make you consider doing all this. This is what surprised me. A little tiny bit. It's obviously not about the money, is it? It's about something else.
But without that, without the money, I think I don't want to go past that, because I think opportunity and encouragement are the two things that make us move. And I think the breath that little bit of money, that little pot, is actually an opportunity, and it's also an encouragement. There is a belief there that the project is worthy enough to be given a little bit of money, and then the opportunity is yours to seize. And I think that within that takes some open minds. And I think the RTO4, my experience with the RTO4 has been that there is an open mind. They will take a flyer themselves. They go, okay, let's just try it. You say it's going to work. Let's give this a shot. I think community play is a perfect example, because I know what it can do. But in trying to explain it, people are going, well, what's the bottom line? Or how do we get to the end? They're going, well, actually, the end isn't for me to control. That's going to be the community controlling it. And it can be frustrating for folks that have never been through it. They think, oh, my God. But no, RTO4 go, all right, Smith, so here's a little bit of money. Make us proud, go out there, do something. And that's the game here. The aim is to animate this river in a way maybe that is, well, it is unique, and it will be unique. And this is an experience, I think, that will be not only transformative in the present, I think it will also continue to be transformative as we go forward. This is a four-season project. This is a project that we'll do in two or three. We'll do it this year. We'll do a version of it, a proof of concept. Really, this thing will grow, and it will take on a life of its own, I believe, because the stories are important. And if we don't come out of this COVID, we don't come out of COVID shouting, roaring that we're here, that we're still here, then I think we've missed an opportunity. If we go back into our shells, if we go, oh dear, oh no, cannot, the world is bad, then we'll have missed the opportunity of seizing the day, as the poet says.
Super. From an engagement piece, Tristan, I know your own personal ethos and the RTO4 ethos is that engagement piece, that when you bring people together to collectively craft a future for tourism, they will do it. And you've proved it in many destinations over time. The play, I got to tell you, is one of the best implementations I've seen of that theory, because usually we're going out and using the events from the animation program to bring people together. The play is actually bringing people together, and then it's bringing them together in an order of magnitude again and again and again for the next 3 or 4 years. I'm really excited about this. I think the authentic story of the river has been told thousands of times in tiny pockets, and no one's ever heard more than the version that they get to hear at the time. It's going to be fascinating when we can create an awareness of all these histories. I don't think they need to all be in one place or at one time, but they need to all be accessible. And I think that's a huge step. It doesn't achieve reconciliation, but it's time we started to listen authentically. It also gives voice to some incredibly important other cultures that have literally, as you said, been erased from existence, that early UEL settlement. And it empowers the people up and down the river. I've seen a zeitgeist on the Grand. If you're on the Grand, if you're in Elora near the, you know, the mid part of it, if you're Turkey Point in the outlet into Lake Erie, if you're hauled in the middle, or if you're in Bradford, there's never been more interest in the river. It is understood in the context that so many life-giving entities and bodies of water are being understood in the world, which is, wow, we've treated these things pretty badly. They're so utterly essential to our existence, and now we need to turn and care for them. So I'm really impressed with what you're doing. On the stakeholder engagement front, I think it's one of the most authentic and deep projects. But just some last words on that from both of you. Tourism organizations around the world are struggling with that first step. How do you go from an organization that's row primarily has been a marketing row and an outward messaging role and function for the better part of four decades? How do you go to an engagement model? How do you become more relevant? I know you're both working on all sorts of projects like that, but if there's a couple things you could share with our listeners as we close it out, I'll throw it to you first, Tristan, and I'll throw it to Pete.
Honestly, the biggest point of engagement for me has been getting out and talking to people. I know that sounds cliche, but after years of COVID and what we've been calling Hollywood squares of, you know, sitting and talking to people on these Zoom meetings, it really has been meeting people where they're at. I think that's the biggest part. We can't assume that everyone's going to answer an email. We can't assume that that's going to be the best way to engage with them. So that means being creative and going out. And Pete and I have been having story circles, and we've been engaging with different individuals in different ways. And I think that's the first step. And having conversation, getting back to the root of stories has been what has, and having something to tell stories around, like the river, we haven't had anyone that hasn't really wanted to engage with us because we've, you know, we've been lucky, which is, I know that's probably rare for people too, but just getting people to tell stories opens them up so fast to wanting to work with us. So that's how I've had success so far.
Thanks, Tristan. Thanks. Peter?
I agree with what Tristan just said, totally. But a friend of mine said to me a long time ago, more people buy mirrors than buy paintings because they like to see themselves reflected. And I think in what Tristan's saying, the notion here is to listen. It really is to listen. But also in giving a story, then you share a story. And that really is the exchange that's going on here. Because I tell stories about my life. It is being with people. The other piece about this, and if anyone out there is the asset, as it's being referred to in this case, is the Grand River. The Grand River has her own voice. And the thing that I would suggest in whoever's trying to animate their community, yes, the people are important. Obviously, we're all human beings and we love each other and we love to hear from each other and what we're doing, what we're up to. But actually, the nature has something to say. The coyote, the wind, the water, the dragonfly, that somehow, and that's what makes it unique. So when we do the Grand River, we're not doing just any river, we're doing the Grand River, and the Grand River is different than the next river over, than the Nith, that any of the rivers, we're doing the Grand. And that river has her own voice, and we also have to listen to that. We're living in a pretty wacky time. We're climate adaptation, no longer climate reality, no more climate change. We need to adapt, and we are adapting. And I think nature is going to be our leader in that, not us. So I think there's an opportunity within your animation to listen also to the environment. So I'll add that to what, because I agree with what Tristan said.
So one final question, one word answer. Is the Grand River Histories Project an animation making the world a better place?
It will be. That's three words.
Oh. Tristan?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I truly.
Cool. Guys, we're going to come back on this one. This is a great project. I'm really excited because I know by spring, we'll actually start to see some of the manifestation of this. I'm looking at some of the early VR work. I've been auditing it. I know you've had a bunch of outings, some really cool sort of meet with people and take the river at its own speed, so to speak. sleeping on people's floors and couches and hotel rooms. I've heard about that, Pete Smith.
Yeah, and I've got a paddle here that belongs to one David Peacock that's got 100,000 kilometers on it. So yeah, no, history is coming into the house every day.
I think it might be 10,000, Peter.
Oh, I say 100,000. I'm sticking to my story. It's better.
Okay, listen, it's a pleasure as always to speak with both of you. Let's come back and let's do this. I want to update it. I'm excited about your animation fund. I know you launched it about, 3 months ago, 2 months ago?
Yeah, April.
Okay, so and you're expecting to see results sort of mid-spring, early spring from some of those projects. Anything on the roster for this year going to happen? In terms of work, but in output.
Yeah, the community play should have something coming out in the fall to show a little bit of a proof of concept. So that'll help to get people ignited and
Well, there with bells on if you invite me. So.
Oh, you'll be invited. It's called The First Season now. We're calling it this. The proof of concept is gone. It's called The First Season. That's what we're calling it.
Nice. All right. Listen, pleasure. Thank you so much for all the work you're doing, both of you. I admire the heck out of what RTO4 is doing. Pete, it's been a great joy to work with you for more than 30 years. Tristan, your spark and your creativity, it's always an inspiration. So thanks to both of you.
Thank you, David. It's awesome to be here.
Thank you, David.